Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Talking Markets podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's conversation will provide you with a mid-year update on the municipal bond market. Joining us here today for the conversation, glad to welcome Erica Zatsky, Managing Director and Client Portfolio Manager at Mackay Shields, which is an affiliate of New York Life Investment Management. Erica is responsible for client relationship management and business development initiatives for Mackay Municipal Managers. With that, Eric, it's great to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for dropping by, and do look forward to hearing your current thinking on the municipal bond market.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's dive right into it. I know, Eric, earlier this year you laid out five high conviction themes for the municipal market. So we're recording here today on July 31st, so a bit past the halfway point of 2026, though. Which one has surprised you the most, and which one do you think investors still aren't fully appreciating at this point?
Yeah, so each and every year, just to give some context, we do a top five sort of insights. It's like our version of having a crystal ball for the following 12 months. We put them out in January. And look, we try and hold ourselves accountable, and we sort of take a mid-year snapshot. And I'm happy to report that, you know, 4.5 out of 5 of them, you know, have really sort of come to fruition. You know, for me, I think the biggest surprise, I think, just looking at the market in general, is just how resilient the municipal market has been, you know, really despite an environment that on paper looked pretty challenging. We entered the year with concerns around elevated supply in our space and policy uncertainty and really the prospect of higher interest rate volatility, which we indeed got, right? But yet demand has consistently overwhelmed new issuance. So we really like that technical backdrop. And what that really means for us is that it's allowed spreads to tighten and municipal credit to really sort of outperform through the end of July. To the second part of your question, the theme I still don't think investors fully appreciate is probably the importance of municipal credit selection, you know, and how they're sort of going about gaining access to this space, right? The narrative really tends to focus on tax exemption and interest rates, but we are really seeing an increasingly wide dispersion in our sector between the subsectors of issuance and individual issuers and really the structures that come to market. Keep in mind, the municipal space is large. We're talking 50,000 issuers, 900,000 CUSIPs. It really is mammoth. So simply owning an index really just isn't enough anymore. You know, active managers have really significantly more opportunity to add value. So I think that's one thing we want to continue to head on down the stretch here.
So building off of that, if we spotlight revenue bonds for a few moments, they have had meaningfully outperformed GO bonds or general obligation bonds here in 2026. Eric, do you think that was simply a trade that worked, or do you think there is a longer term structural story that investors should still be positioning for at this point?
I think it's much more structural than cyclical. You know, general obligation bonds, you know, historically, and when I say general obligation bonds, for people unfamiliar, we're really talking about, you know, local towns, cities, villages, states, counties, things that are dependent on the taxes that you pay on your home and school. That's what we're talking about here. But those GO bonds have historically been viewed as, you know, quote unquote, the safe part of the market because they are backed by those taxing authorities. But today's municipal market really is increasingly driven by essential service providers, right? And what do we mean by that? Utilities, transportation systems, hospitals, higher education, you know, airports and other enterprises that, you know, often have dedicated revenue streams and significant pricing power. We can point to like New York MTA as a perfect example of one of those sort of essential service providers. You know, and many of those issuers have stronger financial flexibility than investors realize, right? And they also offer a meaningful yield premium over comparable general obligation or tax-backed bonds. That's the most important thing. So, you know, I don't think that the advantage disappears simply because they've had a strong year. You know, revenue bonds really continue to offer one of the best combinations, in our opinion, of incremental income, improving fundamentals, and that diversification across sectors that we just talked about a second ago. And I think that's something that I don't foresee changing down the remainder of 2026 here.
Now, Eric, one of your strongest calls coming into 2026 was favoring the 12 to 22 year portion of the yield curve. Now, after such strong performance, do you still see value there, or has the opportunity shifted elsewhere at this point?
You know, that part of the curve, Dan, has certainly rewarded investors. And I think that's one of the insights we got, like, just completely spot on. And just to give you some numbers around it, right? The intermediate part of the muni curve here, as rates have sold off in the last month, you know, those are sitting at year-to-date losses, you know, maybe like 68 basis points, really looking at, you know, the 10-year portion of the muni curve. Conversely, if you look out to 17 and 22, I mean, those are still up almost 2% year-to-date, a big variance there. So our original thesis was really that investors were being well compensated to extend duration into what we viewed as the most efficient part of the municipal curve, right? As yields declined and demand increased, that segment has really performed exactly as we expected. You know, today, I'd probably say the valuation advantage has narrowed, but certainly is far from disappearing. You know, for us, right, rather than making broad duration bets, we're spending most of our time looking at relative value along the muni curve, and that can include coupon structures, call features, specific maturities where, you know, technical dislocations could still exist. You know, for us, we primarily remain duration neutral relative to our benchmarks because, you know, philosophically, we don't believe consistently predicting interest rates is really repeatable, especially when you're trying to achieve excess total return. But you know, we're constantly looking at where the market's mispricing risk. And with all the demand in the muni space still aggregating sort of 10 years in on the curve with all these separately managed accounts and ETFs, you know, being a little further out has really just made the difference in providing value and income into the portfolios.
Now, if we take a few moments to spotlight high yield municipals, they have been one of the best performing areas of fixed income here in 2026. Does that mean, Eric, that investors should be increasing credit risk, or are there better opportunities elsewhere in the muni bond market?
It's a great question. And just again, I love numbers in context, right? So IG beta exposure to munis this year, year to date, they're up about 56 basis points. Beta exposure to the high yield sector, up 269 basis points. So very, very big outperformance there on the high yield side of the market. However, I think it's important to sort of, you know, when you're looking at this space, that we should remember that performance alone really shouldn't dictate portfolio construction. You know, high yield municipals in particular, they really benefited from, you know, stronger economic fundamentals, you know, limited defaults and really supportive technicals. There hasn't been a ton of issuance in the high yield space this year. So what has come to market is, you know, primarily very well bid, oversubscribed, you know, just gobbled up by investors. You know, but what happens after that, after you have such strong returns? Well, you know, spreads are considerably tighter than they were earlier in the year. And if I sort of roll back a spread chart over the last 10 years, you know, high yield spreads still do look a little rich. Doesn't mean investors should avoid high yield. It just simply means they need to become much more selective, you know, when they're sort of picking and choosing their spots in that area. You know, interestingly, one area that still looks particularly compelling is higher quality municipal revenue bonds that we just talked about before. And when you say higher quality, you could be in a single A or triple B revenue bond, and, you know, you're picking up a considerable amount of spread over the high yield sector. So, you know, you don't even have to dip down into the non-rated portion of the market to, you know, get a decent yield pickup right now.
As we begin to close out today, Eric, if you're sitting with one of our listeners today, a UBS financial advisor who's in the process of reviewing client portfolios for the second half of the year, where do you think they can add the most value?
You know, I think there's three conversations every advisor should be having right now. You know, first, many clients remain materially underweight fixed income, and I can't emphasize this enough. And look, I get it. After years of exceptional equity returns, it makes total sense. But right now, like, rebalance isn't simply about reducing equities, right? It's about taking advantage of a bond market that's offering income levels that we consistently haven't seen in years now. Second, I'd encourage advisors to focus less on predicting interest rates and more on locking in attractive starting yields. You know, when we sort of look at the history here, it's shown that starting yield is one of the strongest predictors of forward five-year bond returns for investors. There's like a 90% correlation, right? So if I can get a 4.5% to 5% muni rate right now, that's what I'm looking at as my forward return. So we like that correlation in that forward look. And I think lastly, you know, it's think about the liquidity cost in your muni portfolio and you know, what that really means, right? At the end of the day, the muni market is still retail-driven, you know, mom and pop investors, and they tend to be emotionally driven. You know, we offer solutions, you know, that are, you know, sort of alternative in nature, whether it's our, you know, limited partnerships or our interval funds. And what we do is we sort of take the emotion out of the muni market. And how do we do that? You know, we have gated liquidity structures, and that really allows us to, number one, be more fully invested over the long term because we don't have to meet intraday or end of day liquidity. But it also allows us to not have to sell into a panicked environment. And a key example I could point to is what happened in the muni market last spring, right? You know, a lot of retail investors just sold municipal bonds for no reason at all when there was just a technical adjustment in the shape of the muni curve. And they missed a great opportunity down the second half of that year. So I think like those would be the three things that I would focus on when I'm sitting and talking with advisors.
Eric, it was a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you for dropping by the Talking Markets podcast series to spend some time with our listeners, our advisors, sharing with them your thinking on the municipal bond market and positioning within as we sit here roughly at the midpoint of the year. I look forward to continuing the conversation at some point. Eric, thank you again for dropping by today.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.